Bishus, Harav, Tugutav, Shlita, good evening, good Chodesh. I have to start off with a mazel tov on these wonderful new premises. I remember as a child when this place was built, and I always wondered to myself, if only it could be a shul. Well, the dream has now finally come true. But the most important institution in Yiddishkeit is not actually the shul. The most important institution in Yiddishkeit is the family and the sanctity of the Jewish marriage. And we find this in this week's Parsha with reference to the Sotel. I'm going to ask a few questions about the Sotel. Perek Hei Posuk Yud Beis, Hashem says, Dabel B'nai Yisrael, V'romato Aleim, Ish Ish, a double expression there about a single man, Ish Ish, if his wife goes astray, and she commits a form of me'ilo. Me'ilo is usually a connection with something one is transgressing or using which belongs to the Beis Hamikdosh. But that's not the case here. And usually you get the expression, umolo mal bashem. It's umolo bomoal. Bo means her husband. She is doing some form of abuse to her husband. And we've got there the din of kinoy and satira, where he warns her, he obviously is jealous as to the suspicions that are going on, and she is warned not to be in seclusion with another man, and there are Edim who see her, and that is when there is a doubt. Was she Mezani or not? And she takes the bitter waters. And the Pasuk there in Yudalit says, V'ov ha'olav ruach kino v'kineis ishto v'hinitz mor. And then, rather strangely, it repeats the whole expression, O ova lav ruach kino v'kines ishto v'hi lo nitzmo'o. Then the Tziv asks, surely it could have just said, nitzmo'o, o lo nitzmo'o. But you get eight extra words there, as if to emphasize a particular point, namely that she may well be innocent, and that his kino was for genuine reasons and not for ulterior motives, and that she did not become tomei. And that maybe there was just an overzealous husband who misunderstood what was going on, that she had some business meeting or something like that, and it was perfectly innocent. And there it talks about that he has to bring her to the Beis Hamikdosh, the Kohen, there's an offering made with unflavored barley, and he makes this water out of the dust from the earth and mixing it together. And embarrassingly, he uncovers her hair, and as part of the process, and she has to drink the May Morim Hamo'orim. Hamo'orim, Gematria 496, which is twice 248. 248 representing one person, and there are two people involved. It takes two to tango. 248 times two is 496. And the consequences are either very dire indeed, or a blessing for her, because if she comes through as innocent, she's given a brocha, v'nixov, in Israel, zera, she will have children. If she's already got children, she'll have more children without any pain of childbirth. And the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh says that this is not a chok. It doesn't say zechuka or any expression like that, which means we can ask as many questions as we like to try and understand this very strange mitzvah. After all, we spoke about ish being mentioned twice. Why does it say the word ish twice? It could have just said ish. Ki sister ishto. Why is it double expression? We already referred to another double expression in the Pasuk afterwards. And then there's another thing. The Ramban says that this is the only mitzvah in the Torah where you rely on a nes to take place in order for that mitzvah to function. Now you might say to me, well, there are certain other mitzvahs where a nes comes about as a result. I mean, with Shemitah, we're promised 3 years produce in 1 year, which is miraculous, but that's a schar, that is a consequence, that is not part of the procedure of actually carrying out the mitzvah. It's written by Eglo Arufo that there are worms which come out and which track down the murderer. Miraculous events, but that's not part of the procedure. Here it's essential that Hashem intervenes and does a nes in order for this mitzvah to happen. And you can ask, the Torah is lo bashamayim hi. It's not for Hashem to intervene down here in what's going on, that we have to carry on with our mitzvah, certainly, but here is an exception to the rule that Hashem performs a nes. And then, if a man has problems with his wife, genuine or not, you know, go to the local family courts or the Jewish marriage council, but here it's the Beis Hamikdosh. I mean, in full publicity, the crowds come to watch. The whole thing seems to be so blown up. Why is that the case? And then furthermore, the Kohen uncovers her hair, he takes off her shaitel and undoes the top of her dress, and this humiliates her. And yet, why does this take place if she hasn't yet even taken the bitter water yet and has been proved guilty? She may be innocent, so why does she have to go through this humiliation? Certainly, you could say, well, she at least did do something wrong, whether she was Mazana or not, because she was in seclusion with a man after she was warned, so she did do something wrong. And there's another reason given by Oznaim LaTorah to discourage any financial motives, because she knows that she won't get her ksuva rights if she's now divorced, but if she goes through with this, she will get her ksuva rights, and we want to avoid the financial aspect, so we threaten her with a little bit of embarrassment. So she really has to be stubborn to go through all this. And we'd like to carry out an effort in not erasing Hashem's name. After all, this whole mixture which takes place, it's not just dust and water. On parchment is written the parsha of Sota with Hashem's proper name. And it's erased when this becomes dissolved in the water. And we don't like erasing Hashem's name. It's a big avera. It says, we learn out the Issa, Daraisa, of erasing Hashem's name. And yet, nevertheless, here we have a mitzvah, we're actually told to do this. All right, you can say the Torah said so, so it must be all right. But what is the significance of actually erasing Hashem's name in order to perform the mitzvah of Soto? Well, where else is Hashem's name erased? There is a Gemara in Sukkot Daf Nun Gimel which talks about David HaMelech, who has had a bit of a quandary. The subterranean waters were going to come up and cause huge flooding and endanger a massive loss of life. And he knew that he could control these waters if he would put the Shem HaMeforesh into them. However, he knew that as a result of putting Hashem's name into them, Hashem's name would dissolve and he'd be erasing it. So he didn't know what to do. Is it allowed or is it not allowed? So Achisophel came to his rescue. And he made a kal v'chomer. Achitofel said, if it's the case that you're allowed to erase Hashem's name in order to make peace between husband and wife in the din of Soto, then surely all the more so kal v'chomer, in order to save massive amount of lives, it must be all the more so okay to destroy Hashem's name in order to ensure there's no loss of life. In fact, David HaMelech put the plan into operation. He did it, and it was so successful he overdid it. The waters got too low, and that's why he composed the 15 Shir HaMaalos in order to remedy the situation. And the Avnei Nezer asks a question in Yeradeo Simon Shinai, and he says, what was David HaMelech's problem? Surely, by simply putting what he was doing into water, that was a kind of grommer. He wasn't actively himself erasing Hashem's name. That as a grommer, in a way of causation, Hashem's name would become erased. And there's a proof on this from the Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Chuf Chof, where if you've got Hashem's name on your skin and you want to dip in the mikveh, it says, you can dip. Tovel kataku v'lvat shelo yishafshef. You don't actually rub the name off. But if you go into the mikveh with Hashem's name and it comes off, it's a groma, and a groma is shari, asiyuhu da'osor. It's the actual doing which is forbidden, but groma should be allowed. So he says, well, look, even with groma, we would still like to avoid erasing Hashem's name. It's still a mechika. It's still doing something which, if in the law of damages you do a groma, then you're liable. If you cause something to happen and you didn't directly cause the damage to happen. So in the same way here, the Oruch Laner looks at this in Sukkah, and he says, what was David HaMelech's question? If people's lives were at risk, surely there was a pikuach nefesh. And if there's a pikuach nefesh, why should there be a shiloh whether you can erase Hashem's name? It's not one of the three cardinal sins which one must avoid. Even one should even give up one's life for. Gil ha'ro'os, shvichas domim, and avodah zorah. So you raise Hashem's name in order to save loss of life. So on this he says, well, it's true, but there is another avera on which we say Yarag Vayavar, and that's Chilul Hashem. One should avoid doing Chilul Hashem even at the expense of life, and this is a kind of Chilul Hashem if Hashem's name is being obliterated. The Ramah brings down Rav Hai Gaon in his Tshuvas, in Simon Kuf Osiud, and Rav Hai Gaon was asked the question as to whether a man could change his mind after he made a shavua. He got into a bit of a row with his wife, and he put his hand on the Sefer Torah, and he made a shavua, I'm going to divorce my wife. That's the end of it. And then afterwards, he relents, she serves him the chicken soup, and he thinks, well, she's not so bad after all, and he changes his mind. And so the question was asked to Rav Haigon, can he change his mind? And it was put to him, look, if in the din of the Sotah, it's okay, if it's in the din of the Sotah to relax the standard, to erase Hashem's name, here, maybe we can undo a Shavua. He said he's going to divorce his wife and he's changed his mind. So the Shavua should surely be rescinded on the strength of the Sotah. So he answers, no. It's a kind of pircha to the Achisofel Kal V'Chomer. He says, in the case of Sotah, we want to remove a sofek. We don't know whether she was Mazana or not. We want to find out. So we need to go through this exercise. And there is a specific mitzvah in doing so. And that is prescribed to save a marriage. But with Shavua, there's no exceptions about saving marriages. You make a Shavua, you have to keep to the Shavua. So you can't release. So the Ramah comments on this. The Ramah says, the Kal V'Chomer assumes that erasing Hashem's name is also, but there are extenuating circumstances. He says, here in this case, in the case of Sotah, there is no Isser at all in erasing Hashem's name. The Torah specifically says that Hashem's name will be erased, so it's not that there is some sort of concession or compromise here. That is the din. That is what one has to do. So, if you think otherwise, then why do we bother having a din of Sotah, says the Ramah. Why can't the fellow just divorce her? If she's under suspicion, go to the Beis Din, issue a get, and that's the end of it. But here we have a special din where we are told he can go through this procedure of Sotah. So the whole issa of the Ibad Zem Es Shemom, to destroy Hashem's name, is when it's done, he says, in a destructive way. Lo Sasum Kein V'Hashem Elokeichem is when it is disrespectful to Hashem's name. But in the case of the din of Sotah, it's not disrespectful to Hashem's name, and therefore there is no Isser at all. With Sotah, it's constructive. And in fact, we find this in Halacha L'maisa. If a Sofer is amending some mistake he did with Hashem's name, he can rub it out in order to correct it. That is not called erasing Hashem's name, because it's for a constructive purpose, and it's not disrespectful. I remember as a child, we had once had a missionary coming to the door. And he put in my father's hand one of these books, which had written in Hebrew, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, Vayam Shemoa, and other verses from Tanakh in Hebrew, and then bits from their so-called New Testament. And we had a lovely coal fire burning at the time, and in front of this missionary's eyes, my father put the whole thing into the coal fire. To the horror of this missionary, seeing us burning the Shema. But that is the halacha. It's written by Ovid Avodah Zorah. It's not disrespectful to Hashem's name. It's a kiddush Hashem in order to do this. So the Kal V'Chomer of Achisofel still stands. If you're erasing for a small tikkun, which is the Sotah, it's okay. Then all the more so for a big tikkun, it's okay. So Achisofel was fine. But whatever, even if you're allowed to erase Hashem's name, even if that's the case, the whole concept of doing so sends out a very clear message. To try and resolve an issue of marriage between a husband and wife with this delicate procedure of the Sotah, it's to send a message through to them that what they're going through is very serious indeed. And in fact, they are encouraged to back off. We don't really want to have to go through with it, but it is a way of saving a marriage. But it's so public. Why is it all blown up? Why is this whole din of Sotah, we asked, with the Beis Hamikdash? Why can't it just be the local family court? The answer we really hear in every single wedding speech, Ish v'isha shchina shri b'neihem, that you have Ish and Isha, and you've got the Yud and the Hey together, which make Hashem's name. If they don't keep the Torah, then you've got the Eish, chas v'shalom. But if Hashem is going to embody his Shechina into the community, v'osu li mikdosh v'shochanti b'soichom, then each individual marriage has to be run with the sanctity of Kedusha in order that the whole Jewish people are benefiting from the presence of the Shekhinah. And that is why the whole procedure goes through the Beis HaMikdosh. Because a very strong message has to be sent through that for the Shekhinah to rest amongst Klal Yisrael, the marriage has to be run on lines of Kedusha. Coming back to the beginning of the Parsha of Sotah, Rashi says in Perek Hei Yud Beis, why is the parsha here written straight after the din of Terumah? The din of Terumah is written just beforehand, and then straight after you've got the din of Sotah. So Rashi says, if you hold back what you're supposed to give to the Kohen, then chayecho shetitztarich lavoetzlo lavilo esasota. If you don't perform your mitzvah of truma properly, you will end up bringing your wife as a sota to the kohen and the beis hamikdash. This is from the Gemara in Brochus, daf samach gimel. This is very surprising. You know, if a fellow holds back his truma, we're talking about 2% of his produce. He's holding it back from the kohen. It might mean he's separated already, but he doesn't deliver it. He can't be bothered. He's lazy. All right, it's not right to do, but that's going to end him up in bringing his wife as a sota to the Beis HaMikdash. How is this possible? How can we understand this? What has one thing got to do with another? To create the suspicion of an adulterous wife simply because he held back 2% of his produce. Rav Dushinsky, in his Teras HaMaaretz, writes something very interesting. He says, it is a possessive person we're dealing with here. The man who is the husband of the sota is a very arrogant, selfish, and dominating man. That is why it says ish, ish. Not only is he a masculine man who is in charge of the household, but he magnifies it, he dramatizes it, so much so that he's such a dominant feature in the household and so bossy to everybody that we say ish, ish. And this man is a very possessive man. He's a very selfish man. He's the one who holds back the truma. So we've got the answer to both questions here. Why is there the connection between truma and sota? Because it's a possessive, selfish man. And why is it that it says ish, ish? Because this man is behaving in such a dominant way. A man is the posuk, ish, ish. It's not something which you would normally read, although there is another parsha by Pesach Sheni, but that's another perish in any case. So we've got this man who is behaving very inflexibly. The one who is mean to the Kohen is over-dominant in his house. He's stretching his authority unreasonably. But why is it that the Medrash pinpoints this? So the Medrash says, Limdos chatora shatevatron besoch besecho. We learn from this whole din with ish ish, a person should be flexible in his household and in the way he deals with the members of his family. A decent husband is flexible. The cause of the sota's behavior, he says, is the husband's dominant behavior. So he quotes the Gemara in Gittin. La'olam al yatil adam eima yaseira b'soch beiso. A person should not exercise overzealousness and causing others to have fear and reverence of him in his household. Because if he does so, he will eventually find that his household is the cause of Gilui Arayos, Shfichas Domim, and Chilul Shabbos. Gilui Arayos, we've already explained, Shfichas Domim. Well, people might start murdering each other with the excuse of manslaughter. Chilul Shabbos, they'll be worried he's complaining so much and that the heating was not set high enough and they might break Shabbos and turn it up on Shabbos because they're so scared of him. So we have to be careful when we're blaming our wives. Sometimes, maybe according to this, we should be blaming ourselves. We certainly don't want to be like Yehuda ben Papos, who locked up his wife in the house when he went out. Gemara in Gittin, Daf Tzadi. So when the husband is dominant, it creates resentment, it creates rebellion, and that is when the woman starts saying to herself, I'm going to have an affair. I can't put up with this. That doesn't justify her. She's not doing the right thing. But the Torah is recognizing that there is a cause to the whole symptom of becoming a sota. And that is, she's unhappy in her house. We've got, therefore, two stubborn people here. We've got the man who we've described as being very stubborn, who is miserly with a kohen. He shows no affection to his wife. But we've also got a wife who's stubborn. She has disobeyed an instruction not to be secluded with another man, even though it might have been for good intentions, it might have just been a business meeting or something, but she disobeyed and the Edim saw, so she was stubborn as well. And you know what happens when two stubborn people come together in a relationship? It's not a good recipe. But for her to run off to have her affair, that's not the solution. The mature approach is to stop being stubborn, to talk things through in a calm way, and if necessary, to get counseling. So he shouldn't yell at his wife, I don't allow you to see this white man again. It's true, he's right. She shouldn't see that man again or be secluded with him. But it's not what one says, but the way one says it. You should sit down, tell her why she's so special to him. And you should say, I feel uncomfortable about the fact that you're meeting this guy. Let's try and resolve it. And then you won't get this whole thing blown up with Adam, because once the Adam have seen her being secluded with a man, she's forbidden to her husband. That's it. Until she's drinking the bitter waters and come out unscathed. So his fiery attitude spells disaster. He's being overbossy with his family, which might lead to various averus being caused. And it's a sad truth that there do appear to be a number of chassanim nowadays who are getting married without the proper hadrocha to know how to behave towards a woman. They've never really grown up, other than maybe having a mother and sisters, to know how to relate. And hadrocha is really needed to understand the fact that women sometimes feel or think differently to men do. They go through physical difficulties every month, they have childbirth, and sometimes we men don't understand it enough. And, all right, you could say, well, it's her fault. You know, she's the one who's yapping on at me and doesn't understand me. And I understand her, but she never understands me. Well, it's true that I don't always have to have the last word, but I do. Yes, dear. The Zohar says that the male, the Zohar, is the nosein, is the one who gives. And the female, the nekevo, is the makabel, the one who receives. That's not to suggest that you're not allowed to receive a plate of soup from your wife. But initially, in the starting off of a relationship and continuing that relationship, it's better to be in the nature of the man to give than to receive. And we find this in the Torah, in Parshat Ki Tsetse, when a person gets married, he's not allowed to go out into the army for the first year. Shaileth, he can even go away on business in the first year. And it says, V'simach es ishto, and he has to make her happy. Hold on a minute, that's not fair. Why can't she make me happy? When I get married, I want her to make me happy. So why does the Torah say V'simach es ishto? Because the Torah recognizes that the initial initiative has to come from the man to create a happy and tranquil household. And then she will rebound it. It'll all fall into place. But the duty is on the man itself. And to do everything possible to avoid machlokas. Spend on her what you can afford. Bring her a cup of tea, a bed in the morning. And understand her difficulties. And in general, it's always a good idea to avoid anything which could start a machlokas. I'll tell you a little story which once happened to me quite a while ago. I was at a Sheva Brochus. And we were davening Maariv. It was in a Chabad household. And we were davening Maariv, and we were facing a picture, a very large portrait of a very great man. And I thought, I can't daven towards this picture. I was a young, innocent 19 or 20-year-old. And I thought, this can't be right. You know, you can't daven towards a picture. So just as the Shemoneh Esrei started, I went up to the picture, and I turned it round. I could hear some sorts of going on, but I ignored it, and then I davened. And I didn't think any more about it. And then afterwards, well, I won't describe everything that happened, but I managed to get out of there alive. Now, I thought to myself, you know, what did I do wrong? So I asked my Rosh Yeshiva, Rav Meir Schlesinger Shlita, and I said to him, you know, was I right or was I wrong? You know, you can't daven such a big picture. And he said to me, in halacha, you're right. The mere fact that that Rebbe is such a great man, all the more so one mustn't daven towards that picture. Whereas if it would just be a picture of some flowers, it probably wouldn't matter so much. So in halacha, it's true. You don't daven to such a picture. But there's another thing you have to know. You don't do anything which might start a machlokas. Even if you know you're right, it doesn't matter. You don't start a machlokas. So daven in a different direction. Don't face that way, face another way. You don't have to face Mizrach. And that's good enough. But don't do anything which starts a machlokas. A worthwhile thing to mention, perhaps, when we're talking about marriages and how they succeed. Obviously, there are plenty of Mamari Chazal which talk about the woman having to honor her husband. But I suppose we'll keep that for the ladies' shear sometime. And so, for those of you who are estate agents, your favorite phrase is, Location, location, and location. What is the important phrase for a successful marriage? Midas, Midas, and Midas. So, although we don't have the mitzvah of Sota nowadays, we can draw many lessons from it. And we can see the beauty of the Torah as we analyze this mitzvah. If we just put ourselves into the minds of the different people playing their parts, what are they thinking? What is this woman thinking? If she is innocent, she says to herself, look, I'm getting a good deal out of this. Why should I take a divorce? I lose my civil rights. If I drink the bitter waters, then I'm going to have more children and I'll be released from the pain of childbirth. And I know I'm innocent, so why should there be a problem? All right, they might still suspect me if I have a divorce, and my shidduch chances afterwards might be nil. So I can prove my innocence, I'll drink the water, I'll get more kids, and maybe my dominant husband might now eat humble pie and be a bit nicer to me. The sota who is guilty, what will she think to herself? She'll think to herself, well, I've got a choice of drinking this and dying, or taking a divorce, I'll take a divorce. Unless she's a kofar be'ikah and she doesn't believe in Hashem and she says, ah, I don't believe in this water business. And then she certainly might deserve drinking it. But otherwise, what sane woman is going to drink the bitter waters if she knows she's guilty? She'll opt for a divorce in any case. And she'll think to herself, well, my guilt hasn't been proven. We were talking about the nais of Hashem intervening. In fact, what happens is if she drinks the bitter waters and she's guilty, then the man with whom she liaised will also die at the same time. This is not just some medical potion. This is a nais. And if her husband has been unfaithful, then even if she's guilty, the bitter waters will not work, which will reveal to her what her husband has been up to. So there you get all the nais coming into play. Now, what is the husband thinking? The husband says, I'm the master of the house. Remember, he's the arrogant fellow. All right, he might not want her killed, but he says to himself, if she's been unfaithful, well, she's going to be punished by Hashem in any case. If she's innocent, well, okay, I'll take her back. Maybe I overreacted, and the marriage is saved, which is what the objective is of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because what is HaKadosh Baruch Hu thinking? Hashem says to himself, they could divorce, but then the tears will be rolling down the Mizbeach. I would rather that marriage survives. The sanctity of marriage in the Jewish people is paramount. So I'll give them a face saver. I'll keep the divorce lawyers out of it. I'm even prepared to do a nais, even though the Torah is lo bashamai mi, to save the marriage. I'll even agree for my name to be erased in order that this marriage can be saved. Because the most important thing of all is that there's shalom in the marital home. As the Rambam ends in Seder Moed, Godel HaShalom, from the din of Sota. So we've asked a few questions. Why does it say ish twice? We spoke about the dominant husband. We spoke about the repetition of kinoi because he has also the Lashem Shemaim aspect. We spoke about the nais, which Hashem stretches himself in order to protect marriage and also to erase Hashem's name, stretching himself to show the importance of what's going on and the significance of what's going on, and the issue of the Beis Hamikdosh, that it's of national concern to save marriages, and therefore that's the way it's done. And there is a deterrent. There is a deterrent that she is humiliated with her hair being uncovered. But she had a yichud, and we should have that deterrent. And now as we approach Shavuos, Zman Matan Toraseinu, we've spoken about the importance of marriage between man and wife. And so strong is that importance of marriage. But also, the whole relationship of HaKadosh Baruch Hu with Klal Yisrael is also like a marriage. Hashem gives us the Torah, and that is the Kiddushin, and we are considered like the wife. And there are numerous sources in Chazal which describe Hashem like the Chosan, who gives the Torah to Klal Yisrael, the bride, and Shi Ashirim is the whole moshul of the bride and bridegroom, her betrayal, Rashi's introduction to Shi Ashirim, that Hashem is the husband, Klal Yisrael is his wife. In Hosea, in chapter 2, it says, and it shall be on that day that you will call me my husband, Hashem is saying. In Yirmiyah, in chapter 2, Hashem refers to Klal Yisrael as his bride. Just as the bride is excited to come towards her wedding day, so we, in that same sentiment, should be excited as we approach the day of Matan Torah, Kabbalah Satorah. So we should all be zocher to a happy marriage in our families with our wives, and we should all have a happy marriage with our HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Have a good Yom Tov.